You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 10 June. We've got UK unemployment data due later this morning. Expected 4.7% versus 4.6 previously. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Comrade Mepulwani. The Omnia results, mining booming, agri solid, chemicals weak, SARS not resolved. I suppose that sums it up, the four legs it stands on. Eamon Shanks from Schroders, Quantamental Investing and Opportunities in Europe. Stephen Brown from Fortress, their pre-close update. Vacancies at 0.9%, essentially, I suspect, fully let. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, regulator rules against MTN for misleading advertising, orders it to withdraw or amend the offending ads. Business Day, Avenge flags annual loss amid infrastructure project setbacks, downturn largely attributed to cost overruns and delays in Australia and Singapore. Morning markets, the US was green, S&P up 0.1%, NASDAQ 0.2% higher. The East is mostly green. Sydney's up 0.5%, Tokyo up 0.5%, Hong Kong 0.2% higher, and Tencent is off 0.33%. Commodities, all green. Gold futures, 3,328. Brent, 6,737. Platinum, 1,224. Palladium, 1,091. The Rand is 1,772. Bitcoin, 109,500. And top 40 opening call, 415 points to the green. That is almost 0.5% higher.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Carmen Mepulwani. Carmen, appreciate the early morning. Those Omnia results, as I said, mining really good, agri solid, chemicals weak, bit of a mixed bag. I suppose we kind of sort of see that coming. We get while mining strong, chemicals, everyone is struggling there. Your take on the numbers?
Yeah, very, very interesting and very, very strong numbers, specifically as you mentioned in terms of the mining. I always think to myself, you need to look at the not the subsidiary industries, but mm-hmm. the supporting industries for a major industry like mining. And that'll give you an indication of exactly what's happening in mining at the moment. I think one of the key things for Omnia as well has been they've managed to benefit and leverage off their offshore operations, which we know is unusual generally in South Africa.
Yeah.
They've managed to leverage off this. That's been quite good. And then adding on to that, they've got a special divvy for second year in a row. I don't think see anything wrong with any of that.
It has been. I mean, if we go back, what was it, 5 years ago in that rights issue, it has been a stunning recovery and return of capital to shareholders, both in special dividends, but also in share price. If you followed that rights issue, you've done spectacularly well. And that's not always the case.
No, 100%. I mean, if you look at what the recovery since COVID, since that rights issue, mm-hmm. up over 200%. Where have you heard of such?
Yeah, yeah.
So management have done a phenomenal job. They've got a big bank of cash. Net cash is at about 1.8 billion. I think one of the key things is to watch what they do with that. They've indicated, look, we'd rather return it to shareholders through the special divvy. Mm-hmm. But that's a lot of cash to have on hand. And next move is, I think, quite important, depending on if they decide to use that for acquisitions or anything going forward.
A last point, they've still got that SARS dispute. The CFO in the results presentation yesterday was saying they're unsure, but they probably will challenge it. Some people seem to think that this is sort of an overhang. I don't know, your thought on the SARS dispute. It would be better, I suppose, if it was gone, is the short answer.
No, definitely. I don't think anyone wants that overhang. We've seen previously where the disputes with SARS have definitely pulled back on the perception of the company and also just holding your breath, waiting for a conclusion. So I definitely think the sooner the better. But with these things, it is about negotiation back and forth with SARS and to determine exactly what the outcome is going to be. So overall, I don't think an overhang. I think they've managed to balance it out with, as you said, strong performance in mining, some recovery in chemicals. And you know, the byline was, we've moved from an outright chemicals business, which they have definitely done. So I don't think that SARS is a overhang for them. The market does know about it, which is always important. Mm-hmm. And then we absorb and move on from there.
Yeah, and to your point, they have a pile of cash. However those negotiations go with SARS, it's not like they're going to need to go and speak to their bankers. They're well capitalized for that. We'll leave it there. Common Mepurwani, appreciate the early morning time. That's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Omnia Results, are you holding this industrial group? As Carmen said there, very much used to be a chemicals company, shifted away from that. Mining, agri, still got chemicals. That part is underperforming. The rest are doing great. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Eamon Shanks. He's an investment director for quantitative equity products at Schroders. Eamon, appreciate the time. I want to talk quantamental investing. But before I do, in the note you had out, you, and I'll quote, a new investment era where previously held assumptions no longer hold water. It sounds almost a crazy statement, but it actually is fundamentally true when we look at what's been coming out of the White House since January. It is an era where things we thought were true are quite possibly just not, and it is quite wild.
I mean, just obviously caveat that as well.
Sure.
We say it's also a normal thing to happen. I mean, nothing goes up in a straight line forever and things do change. So whether it's the previously held assumption that there was only the Mag 7 stocks in the index and they'll continue to go into the moon and everyone else didn't matter. And then, of course, that rotated very aggressively and rotated again. The reality is these either sell-offs or rotations or change in market narratives or whatever you want to call it, they're a very common thing that happens in a regular way. And so that you need to be sure that you've got the process in place to be able to manage those rotations and, of course, continually stress test how you want to look at the world.
I like that. They're almost, in a sense, uncommon, except that they happen often, which then says, well, hey, they are actually a little bit common. They're just each perhaps a little bit different, which then brings me to the quantamental investing. Not a phrase I've heard before. Obviously, quantitative, we understand. What's quantamental investing? What's the logic behind it?
Yeah, no, sure. So, I mean, unsurprisingly, it's a blend of the two words, fundamental and quantitative. Mm-hmm. And you can think of it in a very, well, at least for me, a very simple way, which is the fundamental side of things, i.e. we are fundamental investors. We think about the world in the exact same way as a classic fundamental analyst would think of the world. We know what we think matters for the long-term alpha generation of a company. And of course, it matters for different business models. And we are also quants in nature. And we know exactly what quantitative techniques and quantitative tools, whatever you want to call them, are good at. And that's actually processing data, i.e. we want to make sure that we're capturing our own view of the world and our own thoughts of what matters from a fundamental perspective across a very broad investment universe. And we're going to use those quant tools to try and, if you will, model our own thought process and apply it to a broad investment universe. And so it's really that blending of man and machine.
Gotcha. And it makes perfect sense. I mean, pulling the strengths from both and kind of, to your point, kind of blending them. You were talking a moment ago around sort of we're seeing rotation. As you said, it was all Mag 7 up until late last year. What are you seeing? What sectors are driving rotation and reasons behind it? What are you seeing on the ground?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because if you'd asked me 3 months ago or the end of March, it'd be a very different answer to where we are now because it's been an extremely volatile year. And as you said, there's been significant rotations in markets. But actually, where we sit today is almost where we started the year. So it's almost an as you were, nothing to see here and nothing's happened. But obviously, the reality is very, very different. And in terms of where we've seen a lot of the rotation going, of course, we've seen strong rotation into Europe, strong sentiment firing in the US, a lot of confidence in the US. And you can see that feeding through in a very weak US dollar over the year so far. And actually a preference for more defensive parts of the market, whether it be telcos, pharma, select staples. I mean, tobacco has done fantastically, as well as utilities, particularly fossil fuel utilities that are not just bolstered by the fact that they are defensive in nature, but have also got increasingly attractive fundamental characteristics given increased energy usage, AI proxy, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality is in the last couple of months, a lot of that underperformance of the US and, of course, the sell-off in those Mag 7 names has been negated. Not in every case, but it has been negated. So it's almost more of a case of has the market got ahead of itself again? And is tariff risk and, of course, broader risk being completely mispriced by the market in terms of where we are now versus where at the end of the first quarter?
In many ways, I think we're 30 days from the 90-day pause we got from President Trump back in April. And in many ways, to your point, the market is kind of saying it's all going to be okay. We, you know, not gone, but maybe 10%, certainly not the Liberation Day levels. That does seem to be where the market has settled at this point.
It's also amazing because if we came into this year and people said 10% is going to be the tariff across every country selling into the US, everyone would say that's a terrible scenario. But only because these outlandish initial tariffs were what was communicated, people are now starting to see that 10% as a positive outcome, and the reality is very different. That's still an impact to earnings. That is still inflationary. Yeah. And that was seen as a very negative outcome at the start of the year. So it's just amazing how, I suppose, short people's memories are.
Yeah, absolutely. 10% is a horror number, but it's relative, I suppose. Yeah. I want to go back quickly to Europe. Certainly, Europe is, on many metrics, cheap, has been for a long time. I almost feel that Europe's a serial disappointed through investments. Is that a fair comment, or am I being overly jaundiced on Europe? And can it really deliver this time?
I think that's a very fair comment. The reality is you've had the fiscal side of things, which has been, you know, almost perpetually austerity-driven. Mm-hmm. You've got, obviously, Germany, which was extremely concerned with debt and not over-indebting itself. Of course, that's changed more recently, but that's the reality.
Yeah.
And, of course, you've got a less productive society. That's across both Europe and the UK, as well as, you'd say, regulation that stifles growth and innovation. Mm-hmm. And all of those things are true. And, of course, back to that point of has it always disappointed? It has, because the US has had higher growth, has had high productivity, has had higher profitability and higher margins, and, of course, a greater, I suppose, involvement in new age sectors versus Europe. Yeah. But I suppose where we sit today, you've got the monetary side becoming more accommodative in terms of rates coming down much faster than in the US. And you've got the fiscal side, which is also looking more accommodative, particularly, obviously, as I say, within Germany, which is what has been the engine for Europe. And so are things changing in terms of maybe high-level factors that can drive continued outperformance? Maybe. It's still too soon to say, but the region itself is still priced at a much greater discount than it has been historically. And so if we do start to see an increased growth in those fundamentals at the company level coming through, there's no reason that discount can't narrow further back towards a sort of long-term average.
Yeah, and I take the point. We have seen some fundamental shifts in Europe over the last little while, but we'll leave it there. It's Eamon Shanks. He's an investment director for Quantitative Equity Products. Schroders, appreciate the time. Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Stephen Brown, CEO of Fortress. Pre-close update for the period post-December 2024. Stephen, a fairly strong update, and I want to quickly delve into a couple of points. But your logistics and your retail, you're sitting at vacancies of 0.9%. I imagine that for technical purposes, that's full occupancy. I mean, you're never going to sit at 100% for any protracted duration, I imagine.
No, that's right, Simon. It is, for all intents and purposes, close to zero. I was actually just this morning joking with our head of asset management saying we've clearly been a bit soft on the rentals if that's where our vacancies are at. But no, I think it just speaks to the demand in those two sectors and the fact that we have, I think, a good quality product to offer tenants. So it is looking good. And I think the whole sector's actually had quite a buoyant May and June.
And logistics in particular, and this has been a progression over time, but logistics remains a really strong sector in the property space. I was going to say locally, but truthfully, the world over.
It does. I mean, I think, as we've discussed before, a couple of factors, which is really supply chain optimization by all of the big retailers and bigger logistics companies, and also that little bit of pixie dust in the form of e-commerce, which does add a bit of marginal demand. And I think we're seeing the retailers push big into the e-commerce space to compete with the e-commerce giants. And that's very positive for our logistics sector, for sure.
You've also then got the Central and Eastern European. I imagine the same dynamics are playing out over there.
Yes, similar. But I think the one benefit of Eastern Europe is they also have macroeconomic growth, which does really pull the property market up. And they've also got nearshoring, where I think, as we've seen with what happened in April and a little bit of, you know, almost trade wars starting, is I think Europe has realized that bringing some of that production capacity back into the boundaries of Europe is important. And I think Eastern Europe is certainly the place to be, because they have slightly lower wage costs and are able to produce things quite cheaply. So I think that probably adds to a little bit of that momentum in Central and Eastern Europe for sure.
Yeah, and they've got some GDP growth, which certainly helps. Quickly to touch on office. Office, you've been exiting it now for around about a decade. You haven't got much left. Are you seeing much improved activity in what little office you have left?
So we actually are. It certainly doesn't mean that our 1.5% that we have left in offices of our total portfolio is going to grow at all. We're still looking to exit. But I think that market has definitely seen green shoots and a lot of the tenants coming back, looking for returning their staff to the office, also looking for backup power. And more importantly, in Gauteng, where all of our offices are, bar one, looking for backup water. And I think that's important when you're looking to staff an office. So the fact that we can offer that, I think, is a big plus in our portfolio. And our offices are relatively cheap. You know, they're kind of sort of one or two stories, usually kind of B grade in and around Bryanston and the northern suburbs in Gauteng. And I think those have actually recovered quite nicely from where they were a few years ago. And I think the delta between what we're offering for an office, let's say 110, 120 rand a square, compared to prime offices in Sandton, probably does make sense for those more cost-conscious businesses.
You also make a point in the pre-app close update that you sold some non-core properties. You got a slight premium, about a 3% premium to book value. But you know, I've chatted about this before. I mean, you know, running a REIT is never sort of standing still. There is a process of constantly sort of exiting properties on one side and bringing in on the other.
Absolutely. I think you have to, Simon. That's always been our philosophy, that properties date, areas change, maybe. You know, we have built a few logistics warehouses in areas, for example, Pomona, when we thought it would be a lot better than it has turned out to be. We still have a good warehouse there, long-term lease, great tenant, but it just hasn't turned out the way we envisage it. So that's one that we would probably look to sell. And I think you just have to continually do that. And it also makes sure that your portfolio overall is remaining newer, better quality, and of more relevance to tenants. So I think that is part of our DNA. And it also comes along with a lot of the corporate action of the past, where you buy these big portfolios and then you have to cut the tail off quite aggressively.
You're also being your solar PV, still increasing capacity there. This is no longer the load shedding story. This is just A, it's renewable, and B, in many cases, cheaper than Eskom. And certainly, if we look at Eskom increases over the next 5 years, we'll just get cheaper.
It is. You know, I think that's a common misconception. It's never been a load shedding solution, because a lot of these bigger commercial installations, you don't have batteries that easily or cost effectively fit in, unlike a lot of the home solutions. So it's always been actually an investment. And what we've tended to do is link that up with generators in our retail schemes. Mm-hmm. And it also lessens the load on the generator. So there is a cost saving there. But it's one of our best capital allocation decisions at the moment. We're getting returns of 20% plus in our little solar business. I think the one downside is we can't deploy that much capital, if you look at our total asset base, into rooftop photovoltaics. But it's a fantastic capital allocation for us. And added to that, the environmental benefit of being able to produce renewable energy for the tenants to use. So it's something that I wish we could grow, but unfortunately, we're almost petering out of the low-hanging fruit in our portfolio. We've used a lot of the rooftop space already.
Yeah, you literally just run out because, as you say, 20%, phenomenal return. But we'll leave it there. Stephen Brown, CEO of Fortress, always appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Petli Radenhuis, Herenia Capital Advisors, yesterday, talking crypto and asking him which ones are the ones that he holds and trades. Of course, Bitcoin, what else? He basically said, well, bit of Ethereum and maybe some Doge from time to time. We asked you your preferred crypto. A third each said Bitcoin only or no crypto for you. A fifth said, yeah, some of the larger ones. The rest said all of them. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Premier Group results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.